Today we have Professor Dr. Henning Breuer on the show, who is a professor at the University of Applied Science, Media, Communication and Management in Berlin. And he is helping companies like the Deutsche Telekom, General Motors, Dropbox, with his company called UX Berlin, where he helps those companies with their innovation management. Before we dive deeper into the topics and in the particular topic of values-based innovation management, first, welcome to the show, Henning.
Yeah, thanks, Nikolai, for having me.
Before we dive deeper into this podcast, we had a small conversation about value and values-based innovation management. Maybe that we have it from the begin on right. Where is the difference in both of these pronunciations and wordings?
Yeah, that's a good. I think that's a good starting point, because we actually sometimes have that confusion between value and values-based. So what we want to accentuate with the plural here is that this is not about value add in the first place. It's not about value creation in an only economic perspective, but about different notions of what people consider desirable, right? Mm-hmm. So personal values, organizational values, even global values, such as justice between generations as a core value of sustainability, privacy protection when it comes to personal data, or protection of health and caring for the most vulnerable, for instance, in the current corona crisis. So that's the main difference here.
Mm-hmm. Super interesting. So it is more about connecting what the world really at the moment needs, rather than thinking about how we can adapt our value base to new economic goals?
Yeah, I mean, it's of course everything here is closely tied to economic goals, because we are dealing with the business world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also we're dealing with the big societal challenges, right? Like they've been formulated in the Sustainable Development Goals, where the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, for instance, they estimate annual investments of $5 to $7 trillion a year to achieve these goals. And that means they can only be achieved if private business, the private sector, is heavily involved in the attempt of achieving these goals. That's why we think it's important to commit to such normative frameworks and to formulate specific goals for an organization, but even for a specific project. Yeah, and values, like they have been defined by, for example, the psychologist Sholem Schwartz, can be defined as ordered systems of priorities. And we think understanding these systems better and using them to steer our innovation efforts would take us into more desirable direction, and one that's actually addressing global challenges.
Mm-hmm. So when we go in from this big picture view into some concrete areas, what is value-based innovation, and how would you explain it, especially maybe to people who haven't connected yet the words the wordings values and innovation in the same phrase?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing, and actually the quite interesting thing that we started from, was the observation that these two concepts are rarely being well connected. So if you pick up an arbitrary innovation management textbook, you will most likely not even find the word values in the index. And that, I think, is quite astonishing, because we need a sense of direction. We need some integration of different stakeholders in the whole context of innovation. So we found it quite interesting that this, from our point of view, very essential concept is kind of missing. So how we define values-based innovation is managing the whole innovation process based on our notions of what is desirable. And of course, companies proclaim values, oftentimes very globally formulated, even stereotypical values. Mm-hmm. They even use them to acquire new staff, right, and to align their own philosophy with the employees' philosophies, so to say, or they use them for branding, for communicating value propositions and offerings, but they do not use them when it comes to innovation. So if you have this infamous example of the diesel scandal we had here in Germany and other countries, actually VW, VW had values in place at that time. So their sustainability report was talking about sustainability, responsibility, renewability, and so on in the 2014 sustainability report. But when it came down to the project, yeah, obviously different values have been in place that prioritized short-term benefits of implementing such a cheating software over these corporate values that have not been well implemented throughout the organization and especially in the innovation sections. And another observation we and I started from was the observation that many companies, instead of going after their values, go after what they call the next big thing and try to find out what's the next big thing in their industry, in telecommunication, in energy, whatever the industry they're in, instead of looking at what they care about as individuals, as an organization, and what societal challenges they may address through their daily work and their innovation activities in particular.
It's a pretty interesting aspect, which I really liked as well when researching you a bit, this thing of looking for the next big thing versus innovating through some set values. And could you elaborate on that a bit? Because I think that's a super important aspect of your work, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was a starting point of thinking about this values-based innovation approach, having consulting projects where you were supposed to chase this kind of next big thing in a specific industry, as if it was some, I don't know, big animal hiding behind the next tree or something, right? And you had to chase it up and bring it to the surface and make it exploitable for business strategies, so to say. And that's a very... Yeah, like in future scenarios, that's quite associated, I would say, this approach to these like outward-looking exploratory scenarios. And from futures research and scenario management, we know that there's another type of scenarios which are called normative scenarios. And often companies working with future scenarios don't get up to that point to really well define what they are after in a midterm and a long-term perspective. And defining that, we found very helpful and interesting challenge that also brings about several benefits of such an approach. One being getting away from regulations and an understanding of values and normative settings as regulations that just restrict entrepreneurial activities more towards a role of values where they serve as facilitators or levers for innovation on different management levels.
How does it play out in a real life example? Because hunting for the next big thing played out for some companies pretty well, didn't it?
I don't exactly know what you're thinking of, but I mean, I know many companies where innovations actually started with personal insights of the founders, and a specific challenge they are working on, and often that becomes an initial founding of these activities. So one example we discuss in our book on values-based innovation management, it's a book that I've been writing together with Professor Dr. Florian Lüdecke-Freund, a professor for corporate sustainability. I think he'll be on your show pretty soon as well. So That case is the case of Aravind, Aravind Eye Care System, which is one of the world's largest eye care facilities located in India. And in India, the situation is that eye diseases are a severe problem, and one major cause are so-called cataracts, a form of blindness that can easily be cured by replacing the natural lens with an artificial one. Problem is that even though a fifth of the whole population needs some kind of eye care, many of them don't have the financial means to afford such treatments that are needed. And sometimes entire families fall into poverty because elder ones in the family turn blind and cannot make a living anymore. So the founder of this company, Aravind, Dr. Govindappa Venkataswamy, he started in experimenting with new forms of healthcare already in the 1970s, based on his personal values to serve humanity. And for that reason, Aravind installed its corporate mission, so to say, which is the mission of eliminating needless blindness, and not just a typical value proposition like providing high quality and reliable eye care to customers, right? I mean, that would be a perfectly fine regular value proposition. And only if you take these values of humanity, motivating Dr. V, as he is called also, and this normative mission of eliminating needless blindness, you can understand their innovation activities. So, for instance, innovation in processes, right? So instead of giving you an appointment and a lengthy preparation to have an intervention in your eye, some kind of surgery, exchanging the lens, they introduced a process like McDonald's is applying on their hamburgers, right? On operations like on a conveyor belt, that allowed them to do an operation every 10 minutes instead of a few a day only. They went into product innovation and brought down the price of the lenses that they were importing from foreign countries before for around $200 to $5 a piece, and even further down towards like $2 a piece for these intraocular lenses, which also allowed them to scale much better in supplying these lenses. They introduced service innovations, saying, okay, we do not just open our clinic and wait until the patients come along, but they knew that many people living out on the countryside, maybe they didn't have the knowledge or they didn't have the financial means to just take a few days off, travel to the next big city and go to some hospital, but they equipped screening trucks and sent them out into these rural areas to offer free screenings for those people who might need such kind of eye care. And they also created a new business model where every paying customer is kind of cross-subsidizing one up to two customers who cannot afford a payment. And actually, if you turn up now at one of the hospitals today, you do not even have to legitimize yourself. You can just say if you want a paid or an unpaid treatment, and maybe get some extra service, a vase with flowers next to your bed when you're waking up after the surgery if you're paying. If you're not paying, you might miss out on the flower, but you still get the same quality eye care that is needed without having to pay for it. Right. Mm-hmm. And this whole business model, of course, can only be understood and can only be invented if you do not aim for just providing high quality eye care. Yeah. But you need to understand the mission of eliminating needless blindness to understand this whole innovation ecosystem and to come up with it and to manage it appropriately. So if you're missing out on that, I think it's difficult to understand. And that, of course, makes it interesting for a researcher's point of view, I would say, and also for a management point of view, because it gives you a new means for generating ideas for innovation, for managing the innovation process, for assessing intermediary results, and for assessing the impact you actually have, not only on your financial figures and not only on like the standard KPIs, but on the normative directives you're giving yourself as a company.
Mm-hmm. I think like listening to such a story, everybody of the listeners, and at least I, like when I think about a story, it is beautiful, you know, it sounds really inspiring. And when I listen to the story, and often on this podcast, I just feeling, yes, that is how the world should run. That is how companies should run in a way, right? And before we dive into a question I have in regards to the story, to the story with the company, it was Aravind, right? Is it
right pronounced? Aravind Eye Care Systems, yeah.
Yeah, Aravind Eye Care System. Let me ask you one question, then I want to come back to this example. When we try to agree on what we want to reach as a global economy, would that be at the moment what we all came to agree on? Would it be growth, or was it growth at least in the past 100 years? Could we say that? Was that the aim of our economy, just like growth and thinking about how we can thrive better as a company? The reason I'm asking that is because the story with Aravind and from Aravind, it has a story of growth also, right? It, like through all of this, what they did, it was not excluded. And what I wonder so much is when I listen to such a story, like, do you think we just haven't discovered the power of values-based innovation, or were there some constraints in the past that we haven't established? That is there something that that kept us away from this, yeah, seemingly superpower in a way, right?
Well, I think, like, as I said, like, if you define these values as ordered systems of priorities, it's just an empirical question to find out what the system of priority is in any given case, right? So I would always argue they are not absent, right? Even if a car company comes up with a cheating device, I mean, that's there's a certain set of priorities governing the decision-making behind that. So the first question, I think, is finding out about that, creating an awareness for the impact of these values in the context of innovation, and then putting them to use to actually guide the collaborative efforts. And I would not say that the only motive would be growth, or, I don't know, like cold striving for profit. I think there's a whole mix of values and priorities that motivate employees, that motivate yourself, right? Doing this interview with me, communicating to the people. So, I mean, there's always a mixture. I think there's just a couple of shortcomings that keep companies from really exploiting the whole potential that's there. Mm-hmm. One aspect, I think, is that these values are often formulated on a very global level. Yeah, on a corporate or company-wide level, and not specific for individual projects.
What is a global level and individual project? What would be an example?
They're referring to the whole company, like VW as a company versus VW project to improve the tank size of the diesel engines. And, right. So that's, I would say, on the global level and not on the specific innovation activities. Mm-hmm. Another one is, I think, that values are widely discussed in the business literature, but always as a leadership issue. Yeah, and it's something that is oftentimes just governed top down, right? So the founders, they bring along some values, and then the employees adopt them, and everyone is running in the same direction. So it doesn't really work that way. And we have also other stakeholders in the game than just the employees and the customers, so to say, right? So taking also this like inside out perspective of communicating values to the world rather than also listening to different stakeholder groups, listening to how values are also changing in the society. I think that's also something that is not very widely established along with this top-down approach, this kind of inside-out approach and a complementary bottom-up outside-in approach that would, I think, really help things.
Is that the approach we talked about when we talked about the IBM Values Jam in preparation for the podcast?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a very famous example, I think. So IBM, I mean, and like in the Aravind case, Aravind, maybe that's an important point as well. I mean, it's not a charity, it's not a non-profit organization, it's a social business. But even profit-oriented companies like IBM, they sometimes understood quite a bit about these dynamics, I would say. And actually, it was their former CEO, Sam Palmisano, who said that, yeah, actually IBM is well known for its technology and management systems, but what's actually innovative from his point of view about this company was to define and run a company by a strong, by a set of strongly held beliefs. That's a quote from him from 2003. What he did, he initiated what they called a values jam, and I had the chance to interview the guy who ran this initiative, a guy named David Yorn, who was vice president of IBM communications program related to innovation and technology at that time. And they took the original values that company had, defined by its founder Watson, discussed them within the management team, refined them, and then gave them out, added onto them, and then gave them into discussion on an online platform. And 50,000 employees checked into that platform over 3 days. So this values jam was running for 72 hours altogether, and they contributed several thousands of comments and helped refining and redefining these values in some ways that were even surprising for the management. For instance, the management said, well, let's do something here with customer orientation, right? Like every company pretty much does. And what the employees brought to their attention was an emphasis on the notion of clients, which implies a much more long-term relationship than a just transactional relation you have with a customer, so to say, right? And so they started investing in that new type of relationship. Another one was innovation that matters for our company and for the world. And that nicely demonstrate what we call like this generative potential of values, because having that in mind, that they want to strive for innovation that actually matters on a larger scale, brought them to initiatives like the Smarter Planet strategy and the investment in machine learning systems like the Watson that they became really famous for afterwards. So it was not only a measure to improve the corporate culture and to engage the employees to participate and to create ownership in their organization, but it actually was an initiative that helped the company to steer its innovation strategy and to define new innovation projects that resulted from this values jam. Mm-hmm.
What I'm thinking about hearing about this values jam, like I imagine a lot of people at IBM participating, they're coming some values together, and there is some eureka moment, like some blissful moment for the whole company where they have the feeling they're all going in a similar direction. I would interpret it like it, but what comes then is the application of these values in the everyday life, in the everyday work, right? And like, when we think about the application of those values, even when we brought them all up together, I imagine that as a really, really hard a hard thing to do, right? Because, I mean, we know it for us as individuals how hard it is to change behaviors or to really chase something we set out to do in a way. So how IBM or other companies, how do you believe a company then can really take care that such values are really lived and the people really feel connected to these values even like a week or a month after?
Yeah, actually, I don't think it's that difficult as it may sound. I mean, some people might be afraid of it because values sound like such a fuzzy thing. But if you really look into it, they're more so very specific for every one of us and for every organization and every project. I think the thing is just that they should manage these values like they manage the economic value they're striving for or their revenues, right? So, yeah, to create like a system for coming up with new ideas based on these values, yeah, using them as a heuristic for ideation, for instance, for coming up with new product, service, business ideas, like we saw in the case of Aravind, to use them as criteria to evaluate the progress some projects are making, right? If innovation management, you oftentimes have the stage gate process where there's like different stages of development and then different gates of decision where management takes a decision if some initiative should be continued or discontinued, and taking values as a criterion into this process. And then, of course, in the end, measuring the success and the impact they have with certain products and initiatives also with respect to these initial values. Is this innovation we are coming up actually something that matters to the world? And if you come up with machine learning system like IBM did with a Watson that then actually plays a crucial role in treatment of cancer and many other challenges we have in society, and say, yeah, well, to a certain extent, it actually does. In other cases, maybe it doesn't. And so there's also different methods that are already out there that we haven't invented, that are widely established, that help you explore these values in the first place. Yeah, I think of ethnography, where you explore customer values, especially. If we have ourselves developed a tool for values-based business modeling, where you can create alternative business models starting with the initial values in order to define what belongs to a business model, like a value proposition, different stakeholders, different revenue models, and so on. And if you put that, or if you frame these kinds of activities through a set of values, you come up with, I think, valuable and also long-term viable business models. We know that from our experience with working with that tool, for instance. So I think there's a couple of tools out there that are already being used. Yeah, but I think what's usually missing is like an integrated management approach to really deal with these values systematically and not in a once every 10 years initiative where the top management does an offsite and then comes back to enlighten its staff with like the new values they came up with, right?
So what is pretty interesting to me when you're talking about values, there is this big notion of it is not something fuzzy and what is hard to use in everyday decision life, but actually it is something which you can look on, you can always have a look on to see if the decisions you're currently making are going in the direction you really want to go or not, and maybe you can could elaborate on that, or is that as you would describe it in a way as well?
Yes, no, I think that's a very good aspect you're bringing up here. So the guidance they can provide in a situation of uncertainty, right? And this is a main characteristic of innovation. There are like three main functions that values can actually provide for innovation managers. So I already talked about this kind of heuristic or generative function that enables you to come up with a new business model, for instance, like in the case of Aravind. Then they can have this directive function in the situation of uncertainty, where a lot of decisions have to be made, even micro decisions about where to go in the innovation process, into which direction to specify and elaborate upon a service, product, business model idea, and so on. And the last function they can provide is to integrate even diverse stakeholders and diverse interests over into a common mindset, so to say, and to identify some shared values to establish a new business or to redefine an existing business.
When we talk about values-based innovation management, and we are now convinced in a way that that would be the right direction to go, and we want to further investigate. Can you share with us a case or a real-life example where you or where you by yourself have applied it, or where you have seen it being applied in a large-scale way?
There are numerous cases, about 30 of them we discussed in our book on values-based innovation management. Mm-hmm. One case that's actually not in the book, but where we applied that in our consulting work is a collaboration we had with the Lab of Tomorrow. The Lab of Tomorrow is an initiative of the German Federal Ministry for Economic Cooperation and Development. And it's implemented by GIZ, the German Society for International Cooperation. And they started this Lab of Tomorrow as a kind of matchmaking platform to establish partnerships between entrepreneurs from developing and emerging markets and European firms. And the purpose of these collaborations was to address different SDGs in specific partner countries. And so in one case, the partner country, for instance, was Uganda. And Uganda is a country where the vast majority of the population is cut off the energy grid and is lacking access to clean energy. So the Lab of Tomorrow was trying to address the SDG number 7, which is to ensure access to affordable and reliable and sustainable energy for everybody. And they addressed different stakeholders and entrepreneurs, and they addressed different European potential partners, such as Siemens, to commit to this normative goal, to ensure access to affordable, reliable, sustainable energy in Uganda. And based on this global challenge to improve the energy provision in the company, different sub-challenges were defined, like how to improve the energy grid, how to provide energy to remote villages that are and will remain off the central energy grid. How can you provide them, for instance, with clean energy to substitute the firewood they're using for mm-hmm. cooking, which has which can cause severe health problems, mm-hmm. and also has quite negative effects on the environment. How can you substitute that through biofuels, for instance, or through biogas plants that then are established as a profitable or social business in collaboration with European firms and entrepreneurs from Uganda. And they came up with different approaches and different business models, facilitate this whole approach based on this normative commitment to these shared values, and end up with different alternative business models, and provide like initial support to get these business models running. They also provide an impact assessment, continuous impact assessment, to evaluate if these initiatives, if these business models, once they're being prototyped and then up and running, actually contribute to this initial goal. And so there's a whole series of these labs, as they call it, with different partner countries like Kenya, Thailand. There was a project on marine waste. So different initiatives that can be based on such shared commitment to selected SDGs in this case.
So the SDG number 7 was something they all aligned around, and through finding this value all together and aligning an alliance around this value all together, they were able to come up with a solution in a better way as in usual innovation project. Is that is that what you just explained in a really in a nutshell, or is there some other aspect I'm missing here?
No, I mean that was probably it in a nutshell. And what they are providing and what we help them to develop is like a whole toolbox of methods how to facilitate such a process, starting from the initial challenge sourcing and framing, how to define these challenges based on the SDGs, how to make them very specific so that they become actionable, how to provide a framing for then a values-based business modeling activity, how to initiate this prototyping and use these initial values as a kind of measurement and assessment criterion throughout the process.
I see. Okay, so the main difference I'm taking away with this podcast for as well my future activities is to really think about how much I have made the values I'm acting upon actionable. Is that something? Is that a key takeaway you would say we should should look out after listening to this podcast? And what is maybe even more to that? Like when we would have a few steps planned now for all of us, how do we deal with our values in the future in the best way? In your opinion?
Yeah, I guess I mean that's one of the key questions here. How to in the first place explore these values for a given organization or for a given project, how to make them actionable in the context of innovation. I think that's important here, not for any kind of decision making, but specifically as a guidance, as a heuristic, as an integrated function for innovation management. Because what we produce through these innovation activities is pretty much what we will end up with tomorrow. So I think it's important to anticipate that and to direct that to something that we all consider as being desirable instead of just chasing any kind of next big thing that provides us great opportunities but maybe even greater unintended negative consequences.
Really nice. When our community now is listening, how can we get deeper? I mean, you talked about the book which you have written already. What are the ways we can engage with you, with your projects? How can we reach out?
Yeah, so I mean, there's our website from UX Berlin where you find further materials and resources. There's on the English version of that website, there's a full download of this business innovation kit, at least of the basic version of that you can just download, print, and use for your own purposes. There's a printed toolkit that we distribute at the price of production if people are interested in this values-based business modeling approach. There's a couple of publications, especially with the co-author of my book, Florian Lüdecke-Freund, also other publications that are linked on the website. And of course, they're very welcome to just drop us an email and share their experiences, maybe to volunteer for a case study in their organization. So my students are also always looking for topics for their bachelor or master thesis.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's different ways. I guess the easiest way is just to drop me an email and take it from there.
Great. I am really excited about the next generation, which is establishing values more and more, and even the current generations within their businesses. And I really liked the aspect which came up now in the few last sentences. That's actually when we manage to establish values-based innovation now, that these are actually the businesses of tomorrow, and we will have businesses that are based on different sets of narratives than we had in the past 100 of years, maybe. It, not to say that in the past 100 of years everything was bad, but to say that there can be a really, really much brighter future than we maybe expect even right now, and when we are able to establish things like values-based innovation. Thank you a lot, Henning, for giving us all of these insights into how our world could look like in the future and how the way towards this future especially can look like. And it was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, pleasure for me. Thanks very much for taking the time, and look forward to some responses of your listeners.
Nice. Henning, nice to see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.